Welcome to Tudo Tuga, the Everything Portuguese Soccer Podcast. I'm Kevin Jesus, Christian Frere, Mitch Frere, as always. And boy, we have a lot to talk about since our last episode. You know, life gets in the way. We got to have some fun. We got to enjoy our life as well. But no matter what, we're still keeping an eye on what is happening in Portugal. So lots to get to from the big three and of course, Portugal. So why don't we start with the Seleção World Cup qualifying getting back underway. It's a big game as Portugal takes on Luxembourg this week. Before we get to that, though, I want to bring up here the standings because that's going to tell the story. So let me just pull this up here in 2 seconds because I think it's very important that we see how this is going to play out. All right, guys, here's the situation. Portugal sitting in first place, 13 points. Serbia second at 11, and then Luxembourg there with 6 points. So before we get to Portugal-Luxembourg, the bigger game, quite frankly, is Serbia versus Luxembourg. So here's how that works out. If Luxembourg wins, I mean, that pretty much assures Portugal a spot of a playoffs, you know, to get to Qatar. Obviously, if Serbia wins, nothing really changes, but then Portugal in a must-win situation with Luxembourg. Guys, how are you feeling going into this round of World Cup qualifying?
I feel good. I think Portugal's in a good spot. And, you know, I think barring any absolute disasters, we should have first place wrapped up and in the bag. I don't know how you feel about it. But...
No, I agree. And I'm going to go back to, we should already be 4 points up.
100%.
That goal was disallowed wrongfully, but whatever. Time to get over it, I guess. But yeah, I don't see Portugal losing this. I think we're in a good situation, hopefully. But you know Portugal. We always gotta do it the hard way.
I mean, how is Portugal looking? Obviously, Fernando Santos already has his lineup set up. What are we thinking? Is he making the right decisions here? Is Portugal kind of looking pretty solid going into this game?
Yeah, they're looking pretty solid, and there's been a lot of injuries going off. A lot of players that were called up there and sent down, so it gives Portugal a chance to look at new players. A couple of them, one of them is Rafael Leão. I think he could have been there multiple times already. He's been playing really good for Milan. And then Mateusz Nunes, I know I brought him up a lot in previous podcasts. Mm-hmm. It's given them a chance to
because Rafa is injured.
Yeah.
Who's the other one? Rafa and Mings Duarte.
And Mings Duarte.
And then he brought in three. So
yes.
There's two left out. He brought in three, which was Rafael Leão, José Font, and then
Trincão.
Those are the three he brought in. But then today there was another two injuries. Trincão got sent home.
Oh wow!
Today, and Rafael Guerreiro got sent home.
Okay.
So
yeah, there's lots. Like I said, lots of injuries, lots of things.
So hold on a second. You said Rafael Guerreiro was sent home.
Yeah, Rafael Guerreiro. Okay. And Rafael Guerreiro and Trincão. Trincão got called up to replace Rafa, and he just got sent home today.
Honestly, that's news to me. I guess I should have been more prepared, but
So now what happens though with Rafael Guerreiro going out? Like, what's the situation there?
In terms of, well, I mean, Nuno Mendes steps in, I guess, that undisputed.
That makes Christian happy.
Nelson Semedo got called in. João Cancelo can play left back. He plays it at Manchester City all the time. Actually, he's kind of their makeshift left back at this point. He's kind of taken over for Zinchenko at left back. It's Kyle Walker on the right and Cancelo on the left almost all the time. So
for sure.
I would almost be okay with that. But I mean, Nuno Mendes, he's been doing really good at PSG. So I'd be okay with Nuno Mendes slotting in at left back and Cancelo at right back.
For
so.
Sure. I know we talked about this last podcast about whether you should play your main 11 or, you know, try out some new guys.
Mm.
I think the Qatar game would be a good chance to start a bunch of these new guys, mm-hmm. like Nuno Mendes, Mateusz Nunes, fill in the blanks.
Yeah, you know talk about Mateusz Nunes, man. You've been raving about Portugal calling him up for a while.
Yeah, he's at.
We got lucky.
Yeah,
we got lucky with them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he rejected. Straight up, he rejected Brazil,
well,
right?
Yes.
Well, no. He was called up to Brazil, but then he was injured, right?
No.
He rejected.
From my understanding, what I heard is that he only had a single dose. He wasn't double vaxxed. So because he wasn't double vaxxed, if he went to Brazil, when he came back, he would miss the Porto game and then the first Champions League game. So the coach said they can't afford that, so he stayed back.
So he planned it that way. Smart guy. Yeah,
so that did happen, and then later on, he came forward and said that he'd like to choose a play for Portugal. And that's why they interviewed one of the press conferences for Ruben Amorim. They were asking him if they during that time period they talked him and convinced him to play for Portugal. That was a little bit of a joke, but yeah. So he did choose Portugal, but that was the main reason why he didn't go to Brazil.
Ooh, how do you see him slotting in?
The thing with Matheus Nunes, he adds a really good element to our national team because he could play in multiple spots. Like, for example, last game for Sporting, he played on the left side, left wing. And last year, he was a super sub as a winger and even played right back too. So he's very, very versatile. He could sit in a lot of...
typically box to box, no?
No, that was a new position for him.
Was it?
Maybe throughout his, like when he was a kid and going up, he was more box to box, but like I mentioned last year, for Sporting, he came on as a winger and even played right back a bunch of times. So he does add that element where he can play in multiple positions. So he is a good player to have.
It'll be interesting to see. To that point, guys, I wanted to talk to you guys about this. So I don't know if you guys saw this, but Ricardo Carvalho was being interviewed by a Brazilian radio station, and he made the comment that although he doesn't disagree with nationalized players, like Brazilian players, for example, more specifically, being brought into the seleção, he thinks that if you are not Portuguese and you were not born in Portugal, the time frame in order to be considered for a call-up right now is 5 years. You have to have lived in the country for at least 5 years to be considered. He thinks that that's too short of a time period. Do you guys agree with that or disagree with that?
I didn't hear about that interview, but I would agree. I think 5 years is too short. A lot of players come in from other countries. They play on a Porto, Benfica, Sporting for 5-6 years. Then just like that, they're eligible. I think when it's, you know, when it's situations like that, I don't really agree with it, because then you'll have national teams with like players from all over the place. And I think it takes away from it. I don't really think that falls into play with Matheus Nunes, because he was there since he was a little kid. Yeah. But yeah, for other players, yeah.
I disagree, guys. I think that 5 years is plenty of time and gets you that citizenship. I mean, any longer than that, look, careers are already short as they are. So take advantage while you can. All the other countries do it. It's not a big deal. Let's enjoy it. Let's embrace it. And whatever, if it works, it works. I mean,
what if they're not Brazilian, Kev?
What if
they're German and they've lived in Portugal for 5 years and they want to call? We always kind of have this, acceptance for Brazilians, because there's obviously, the natural connection between the two countries. But what if they're completely out of the run, like, a German that lives in Portugal for 5 years and wants to play for the Slavs?
Okay, so let's use a real life example here. Let's use Owen Hargreaves. You know, he was born in Calgary, so he had the opportunity to play for Canada. This was back in the 90s.
But he's English. His parents are English.
Well, he had English background, he had Welsh background, and he was playing for Bayern Munich in Germany, and he had played there long enough that he could have played for Germany as well. So he had the pick of the litter, if you will. He ended up choosing England. That was a good decision for him. I wish he would have picked Canada. I bet now he would have picked Canada because of how well we're doing. But, I mean, at the end of the day, though, I think he had that opportunity to make that choice. And I think that, yeah, you know what? If you are a German and you're playing in Portugal, you've been playing for 5 years, 6 years, fine, sure, go ahead. But I think to penalize someone for so long, I think that's a problem. Now, with that being said, I do think that if you aren't Portuguese, then there should be some sort of exceptional rule in the sense of, and again, keep in mind, it's not like we're talking about Lionel Messi playing in Portugal for 5 years and then he's going to go join the Seleção. Obviously, a talent, really good talent, are already recognized by their own national associations.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these are guys that are, middle of the pack. That, yeah, 5 years in, if their national team isn't recognizing them, but Portugal is, and they're filling a need for us, why not take advantage?
Yeah,
for sure. I know there's another, just on a side note, we were talking in our chat about Arta not getting called up. Mm-hmm. I feel like instead of a Trincão, or especially now if you tell me that he went down. Why isn't this guy getting called up?
I don't understand it.
He's on our fantasy teams for a reason.
I don't get it.
He's a stud.
He is a stud. He's one of the best players in the Portuguese league.
For sure.
Arguably. I would love him on our team. I mean, the fact he's not in a big three, and I pose the question, what does Ricardo Horta have to do to get a call up to the Seleção? I don't understand why this guy is constantly
especially overlooked. Now, there's so many players that went down with injuries. Yeah. Pedro Neto's down. Rafa's down. Pot is down. Yeah. Now Trincão's down. How far down the list do you have to go?
And, you know, we talked about it. I know it's a bit conspiracy-ish, but, you know, is it, you know, I right away, because we were talking in the group chat, why isn't he getting called up? And I quickly went to go look who his agent was. It's not Jorge Mendes.
Yeah, for sure.
Does that play a part? We've always talked about what kind of influence does Jorge Mendes have over the Seleção and the call-ups. Well, I can tell you right now, Trincão's agent is Jorge Mendes. Yes. You know, like, does that play a factor? I don't know.
It's Jorge Mendes and being part of the big three.
Part of the big three. But, I mean, Paulinho used to get called up.
Very rare.
Rarely, but he would. I mean, he did get called up. So, I mean, I don't know that it's that. But it could be. It could be, you know, not being part of the big. But, I mean, I just don't get it, dude.
He is so good.
He is so good. And he's in better form than somebody like 100%. Trincão right now. He scored again last week. You know, like, what does this guy have to do? I don't get it.
That's another thing. Like a lot of these players that get called up and rightfully so are from Wolves. Mm-hmm. But if you look at where they are on the table, they're like 14th place, 15th place. Yeah. So it's like a 15th place Premier League team. I know it varies a lot player to player, but like a team that's in 15th place in the Prem is better than a team that's in 4th place in the Portuguese League or third place in the Portuguese League. Like, where do you justify that? You know what I mean? So I personally think that he's long time overdue to.
I agree 100%. And I also did not agree with William getting called up.
Oh. Let's not even go down that rabbit hole again.
I don't get it.
Guys, yeah.
Why do we need Paulinho, Danilo,
William,
and Neves?
Yeah.
Well, you don't.
You don't.
I
especially with the talent pool that we have.
And Renato Sanches is back to full form because he played this weekend with Lille.
He still needs to re-earn that trust to get back to the national team. I'm okay with Renato Sanches not being called up just yet.
Yeah, I think he will. He will, but
he will in time, and I think he needs to gain that confidence back. But I'm not quite sold on the fact that he's quite ready and at that point yet. So my question for you guys is this: so Portugal, I mean, we're feeling pretty confident. They're in first place right now. I mean, realistically, if everything goes the way we think it's going to go, Serbia will beat Luxembourg. Serbia will beat Azerbaijan. Portugal will beat Luxembourg. So Serbia will be in first place because they have one more game in hand. They will have played one more game than Portugal did. So standings won't necessarily mean anything. But knowing Portugal, what happens if they draw against Luxembourg? Is it time? Then there's only two games left to get the job done. What do we do then? Do we hit the panic button? I mean, with two games left, what do you do if you're Fernando Sanches if you draw against Luxembourg? I know we're speaking hypotheticals here, and I'm not a big fan of doing that, but I do think it's knowing Portugal that is something that we need to actually consider.
Yeah, and like if you look at our qualification for the Euro, we only beat Lux 1-0, and it was like I don't remember the exact minute, but it was later in the second.
They gave us a tough time.
Yeah, they gave us a tough time, and let's call it how it is. Luxembourg's not the team they used to be. Like, obviously, we should still win. We're much more quality. Absolutely. I'm not going to go there, but there was times we beat them 7-0 for fun.
One of those teams, they park the bus and they make your life hell because they try to hit you on the counterattack, and
for sure,
a team like Portugal will pour it on, and all it takes is one dangerous counterattack to put you in trouble.
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, teams like Luxembourg do sometimes give us. I think we need to be. We have to have quality in front of net. We need to finish our chances. That was the biggest issue. Our last game is we just did not, especially against Ireland, we were not finishing our chances.
Yeah.
We Bernardo Silva missed a couple. We need to be on top, and we need to be finishing our chances.
Speaking of Bernardo Silva, I can't leave this podcast without mentioning this. Did you see his run against Liverpool?
Everybody saw his run.
That reminded me of Messi in his prime. The thing is, with guys like him and Jota and Bruno Fernandes, like, we got to bring that to the national team. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, if they bring those kind of performances to the national team, then, you know, like we always say, like, we could beat anybody.
And that just opens up the whole other conversation of, you want to bring that to the national team, then it comes down to coaching. It becomes a Fernand Sanz show. And then we're here for 5 hours.
I didn't mention his name yet, so.
I know you didn't. Anytime you do, we got a drink. you know, I was taking a look. Portugal beat Luxembourg the one time that they played them here in World Cup qualifying. Luxembourg, actually, I forgot, got out to a 1-0 lead the 30th minute. I forgot about that. So it was Diogo Jota, Ronaldo, and Paiña with the three goals there for Portugal. So it was actually nice seeing some names beside Ronaldo getting the job done. So here's hoping this time around there'll be more scoring, more offense.
You know what? To that point, I'm really glad actually Lyon got called up, because Lyon has that goal scoring knack. He's playing well with Milan right now, and I think that can kind of, I mean, I'm not saying he's going to start, but you know, he could always come on and be, you know, a little bit of a star sub. You know, it's good to see a few different players that, you know, are in form, scoring goals, that can bring that element outside of just, you know, the kind of core Shinhomals.
For sure. I always have a thing against Lyon because of how he left, but it's because he's so good. Like, honestly, he was one of our top prospects. And I remember on his debut, it was actually against Porto. We had a lot of injuries that game.
Yeah.
And he actually scored against Porto in his debut.
Yeah.
But that being said, I'm going to start a GoFundMe for Rafael Lyon to switch his last name to something else. He doesn't deserve that last name. But.
Well, speaking of Lyon, let's talk about the Champions League and Sporting. Not the start that we had envisioned in Europe. You know, looking at that group, I thought Sporting would be a little competitive. I was wrong. That's why they don't pay me the big bucks. So let's take a look here. Sporting right now sitting in last place. Well, technically tied for third with Besiktas. Ajax and Borussia Dortmund in the top two spots. So it was a disastrous start for Sporting. They lost 5-1 to Ajax, and then they were shut out against Borussia Dortmund. So I want to start with you, Christian. What the heck went wrong?
So I remember when we did our analysis going into the new season, one of the things we touched up on was depth. And I think that's where Benfica does a lot better than the other two teams. Even though Porto, I think they're showing with all their prospects. Yeah. They have a lot of good talent and a little bit more depth. But one of Sporting's issues is that we don't have that luxury. Once we lose one of our starting 11, the quality drops drastically. You won't notice it as much in the Portuguese league, but when you come into the Champions League, it's very noticeable. So in that particular game, Kovac was out, and then Inacio went out right away too. We were also missing Pedro Gonçalves, and we just don't have the quality to, when the other players off the bench, just don't have the quality to step in and, you know, like, not notice them missing in the game. And then also, I actually have it written down here, Vinagre disaster. He was lost. He was, I don't know what was wrong with him.
It was against Ajax.
It was against Ajax, yeah. And he got eaten alive by that Anthony guy. Like, he couldn't make a pass together. He was missing everything. And we had left backs and right backs playing center back, and up front, Paulinho has just extremely underachieved.
Yeah.
He's decent.
How
off
much
the
did
ball,
you guys pay for him again?
We paid, well, it's a little bit of a tricky deal. It was 20 million, but we also gave him a.
Who the hell do you think Sporting could have bought for 20 million?
Euros? Yeah. It was actually, the way I see it, it was 14 million because we gave him a player and they got us and they paid six. So it was like 14. But a player that wanted to come, and he actually, in an interview, he said he wanted to come, with Slimani. And if you guys remember Islam Slimani, it was unreal. But anyways, my point being, without, you know, going away from it too much, we had a lot of really big pieces missing. added the element with low Champions League experience. And then, yeah, other players just not stepping up. We got
it could have been a bit of open night jitters too.
Like, yeah, for sure.
A lot of these players playing in their first Champions League game.
Fair, but you can't afford to do that, especially in a tournament like the Champions League. And I guess, you know, earlier in one of our earlier podcasts, we talked about how Jorge Jesus, you know, his focus was very much on Champions League and in Europe. So I guess for Sporting, now that they finally have won a Portuguese league title for the first time in forever, is it time to start changing their focus a bit so they start looking at Europe and really trying to concentrate on European success? Or is it still a matter of, you know, the league is our number one priority, and then Europe, it's nice to get there because it's financially lucrative, but it's not exactly our priority?
So, great question to bring up, because
that's why they pay me the big bucks, Christian.
Ruben Amorim was asked this exact question, and he said that their priority is the league. So what they're doing, they're building for the future. They're investing a lot in their academy. So one of the issues that us as Sporting fans are struggling with is that there are players that want to come, and we want like another forward, we want another center back, we want all these players, but Ruben Amorim is adamant on growing the team. So like Tiag Tomás, he wants him to be the second guy. He wants two players for each position because he wants to invest in the future. So what he was saying is if they bring in another forward, Tiag Tomás takes a step back, his development doesn't, you know, he doesn't grow as much. So he's really big on developing the players, and he wants to come into the Champions League multiple seasons to gain that experience. So
it's not a bad approach.
It's not a bad approach. We are a team that, knowing their history, that we went, you know, financially, we took a huge hit. So we are growing.
Yeah.
So these are part of the growing pains, you know, with the experience.
And to be fair, they didn't play horribly against Dortmund. I didn't watch the whole game. I watched parts of it, but they didn't play from the you know, 10-minute little intervals that I watched. They were not playing bad against Dortmund.
So great. I'm happy you brought that up, because against Dortmund, it was a completely different game. We had Kovac back. We replaced Vinagre with Reis, and we put him offside. You can look, they scored like three offside goals, or two or three offside goals, and we were super organized. Up front, Paulinho, that threat isn't there. And
Sarabia played well.
So I think with introducing Pot, it'll help us a lot. But mainly, we were a lot more organized, and we played in Dortmund. That's a tough place to play. So
100%.
If you look at the game, they only had that one really big chance to score. And they, obviously being the team that they are, they put it away. But other than that, if you take that game as a whole, we actually played really good. Really good.
So it seems to me that Sporting right now, let's get that win against Besiktas and kind of try and focus on holding on to that third spot to get to the Europa League. So while Sporting is struggling, so too is Porto. But that one's not as much of a surprise, because they were in one heck of a group with Liverpool, Atletico Madrid, and AC Milan. However, Porto did get off to a nice start. Scoreless draw with Atletico, so pretty good. That's awesome. But then Liverpool, the wheels on that bus came. Not only did they go off, it went crashing. It was an absolute disaster for Porto. Humiliating, if you will, for Porto. They don't often lose like that.
It was very bad. Like, shocking. Jaw-dropping mistakes. Zaidu, Diogo Costa. I mean, there were mistakes that, I don't know, playing soccer back in the day, you ever have the dirty penny?
Yeah.
There would have been some guys, you know, wearing the dirty penny at the end of the training. Like, it was bad. And Sergio Conceição, his reaction was basically, if this is the way you guys want to play, I need to have a talk with the president to see if you guys need me as a coach.
Yeah,
like, he was livid, and rightly so. I mean, you can't even fault the coach on a day like that. Like, just absolute shocking mistakes. It was bad.
But that's what I love about Sergio Conceição, the passion that he has, and the fact that he still acts like a player, you know? Yeah. And yeah. I love that. And I think that's such a huge draw. And yeah, I think he's a fantastic coach.
Yeah. Adding to what you were saying that it's sort of expected against Liverpool. But if you look at the last three times they played, the aggregate would be 14-1. That's unacceptable. They lost 5-0, 5-1, and 4-0.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe it was 4-1. It was pretty close. I know it was 14-1 in aggregate. That's unacceptable.
Yeah.
Honestly, it is. And if you look at that game, yes, it's Liverpool. Yes, I get that. But you touched up on it a little bit. The mistakes in that game, especially. And you know what? I want to praise him up and then shoot him down because.
Of course you are.
The old Costa has been absolutely unreal. And I'm going to sit here and say that he's going to be the future goalie of Portugal. Some of the things he's been pulling off in the league is absolutely unbelievable. Even going back to when
they're calling him the next Vitor Bahia.
Yeah, he's absolutely unreal. But I don't know what he ate for breakfast that day or what he did last night. Must have been up playing FIFA. I know FIFA just came out. So.
He's all excited about the start. Yeah, man. Yeah. He's going to start it.
Yeah. If you guys haven't seen the highlights, go back. He was absolutely atrocious. Yeah. Even one of the goals was the fourth or fifth goal. He ran out. No reason to be out there. Just the defenseman was there. He ran out halfway, stopped running back to his net, and I would have paid
damn good money to have been a fly on the wall in the post game talk that Sergio Conceição.
Yeah,
I want to know how many things he broke. Like he must have been like this close to laying hands on the players. Like after a performance like that, it was unacceptable.
It was like
absolutely unacceptable.
Obviously, they have way more quality these English 100%. Teams. These teams, like obviously, they're expected to win,
especially at home.
But like a result like what Sporting got against Dortmund, it's understandable, right? Or even 2-1 or 2-0, 3-0 max. But 5-1, 5-0, 4-1, that's just unacceptable. And the mistakes that were made, you can't justify that.
So why do we hold Porto to a higher standard than Sporting?
Personally, because they have the European record to stand on. They have a lot of experience. They've been there even just last year. They knocked out Juventus. They
knocked out Juventus, yeah.
And they were
it might hurt Cam and Christian, but I mean it's
no.
Porto is a much bigger team.
The only reason why I asked that question is I wanted Christian basically to admit that Porto was better than Sporting, especially in Europe.
No. I never said that. I know you guys are egging me on, but they're not better than us. I'm just saying they have
they're a bigger club. They have a bigger reputation to uphold. You have to call it a spade a spade. It is what it is.
Speaking of bigger clubs, let's check out Benfica. And wow, they're doing pretty good here. They're in second place in their group. They got off to a bit of a slow start with that scoreless draw against Dinamo Kiev. And then it was quite the win against Barcelona. So, I mean, we talked about it before. This isn't the same Barcelona as years past. This is a team that is in crisis mode. They are just a disaster, both on and off the field. But seeing Barcelona in last place in the group stage of Champions League is still a shock to me. Benfica winning 3-0. Mitch, is that one of the biggest wins in Benfica's history? And when I say history, I mean like recent history, not all time, because obviously it's not.
You see the smile on my face? When we previewed the Champions League, I said on the podcast that I thought Barcelona was the most beatable team in this group. And I said it for a reason, because of obviously the issues that they're having. It's much like the effects that we talked about when Ronaldo left Real. And now that he's left Juventus, when a massive player like Lionel Messi leaves a team that has absolutely just centered around him for so many years, he was the identity of Barcelona. And with him gone, they lost their identity. And there's nobody there to step up. You don't have a Neymar. It's not like Neymar was there and now it's Neymar's time to shine. You don't have another player there that can all of a sudden take the torch. And I think they're lost. I think the team is lost. And I feel for Ronald Koeman because I like Ronald Koeman. I think he's a great coach. He used to coach Benfica. I've had a lot of respect for Ronald Koeman. He's a former Barcelona legend. And I feel he's any coach was going to come into a really tough time. with Barca, but you know, it's they're not having a good time. And a guy like Memphis Depay, I'm sorry, is for whatever quality he can have, he's not the I think that's the guy they were kind of looking to you know, do something great at Barca. I'm sorry, he's not that guy. And Barca's in trouble, man. And Benfica took advantage. I mean, you know, I don't want to take credit away from Benfica because they played a very good game, and it's still Barcelona. There's still a lot of quality on that field, but full credit to Jorge Jesus and Benfica. We played phenomenally well. You know, we did not sit back and let Barca take the game to us. We attacked. We hit them. Darwin finally showed what the 25 million euros that we paid for him was all about. He came out to play. Man, it was amazing to see.
But they're going to have to pull out an even better performance when they come up against Bayern Munich because
absolutely. It's going to be like a different game. Different game against
you know Bayern. What? That's a game that if you lost 3 or 4-0, you can't even say.
Yeah, I mean, Bayern's on a different level. Yeah. I don't think anybody was surprised to see Bayern beat Barca 3-0, but people were definitely a little bit shocked to see Benfica beat Barca 3-0.
That being said, I don't know if you remember on our Champions League preview, I was actually more surprisingly, I was backing Benfica more than you were that day. I don't usually do that, nor will I probably will in the future. But anyways,
the way your picks are going, you're going to have to wear a Benfica jersey. Don't worry.
Oh my God. Yeah. Anyways, but I knew Barcelona was in shambles. Yeah. Take nothing away from Benfica. If you look at that game, they had a really great game. Yeah. They were all over them, rightfully so. Zero credit away from Benfica, but that was the first time I looked at that Barcelona lineup, and there's not like they always have quality, don't get me wrong, but you can just see that they, you know, they weren't the same Barcelona. And it just came out just a couple days ago that they're $438 million in debt right now.
Yeah,
it's dollars or euros? I think it's euros,
or it could be euros. Yeah, they are not in a good place.
They're in danger of going down a couple divisions here if this continues.
I know, and you were saying that they lost Messi, but they didn't just lose Messi. They lost a lot of big players over the season. They couldn't afford them to let him go. Yeah. Another one was Griezmann, you know, off my head. But yeah, they're not in a good place.
That's true too. Yeah, they lost Griezmann as well.
Yeah. We talk about Benfica's big win, and then how do they follow that up with a huge loss? And they're the first of the big three to lose in the Portuguese Liga. Benfica still though in first place, 21 points. Port Sporting with 20. Estoril there in fourth with 15 points. But Benfica, what the heck happened to them? Do they just give up? Were they just celebrating too much?
No, they're a little bit on. They're still hungover, I think, from the Barcelona game. No, I mean, Portimonense since already last season, they were starting to play really well under Paul Sergi. Paul Sergi is a very good coach, and he's got that team playing very well. And they are a very difficult team to play. And they're going to give every single team, Benfica, Sporting, and Port, they're going to give them all a lot of trouble. To that point, Benfica did not deserve to lose that game. We had 23 shots on net. I mean, it was a clinic. I mean, there was even one shot during the game. I think it was at the very end of the game, Otamendi hit the post, and you see Paul Sergio, you know, doing the sign of the cross because he was just you know, counting down the seconds to get out of that game. Benfica did not deserve to lose that game. We played really well. We had a ton of chances. We couldn't finish, you know, and they had their one chance, and they finished. So, I mean, it is what it is. You know, we were bound to lose at some point. So, like George Zuz made a comment, you know, can't win every game. That we're bound to lose at some point. I'm not hitting the panic button because it's not like we went out and played horribly. Benfica played really well. They had plenty of chances. They should have scored. They didn't. It happens, man. I don't know what voodoo was done on the Benfica area on the 14-minute net, but we just couldn't. No, the ball was just not going in. Their goalie was making ridiculous saves. I mean, it was one of those games. The ball was just not going to go in the net.
Yeah, and honestly, on that note, like usually the big three, they always outplay. But yeah, they definitely Bifica was definitely all over him. But like I don't know if you remember earlier in one of our podcasts, you guys were asking me if this was a must-win game between Sporting and Porto. And my counter argument was we should win, but it's not a must win because a lot of season to play. And like the big teams are going to drop points. Sporting is going to drop points. Benfica is going to drop points. Porto is going to drop points.
And like, and we talked about, man, this league is getting more and more competitive, man. You know, going in, Portimonense going into Estádio da Luz is not automatically 3 points for Benfica. Shit happens, man, because these teams are getting better.
And added, like, it's not a shot or anything, but it's the team that just beat Barcelona 3-0.
Yep.
Then you go over to you play a Portuguese team at home. Everybody thinks that it's going to be a cakewalk, and they lose. So,
actually, to that point, Portimonense went onto Twitter and posted the result and tagged a shot at Barcelona, saying, "See, Barca, this is how you do it."
I did see that. That's
awesome. You know, I get the whole, you know, there's no must win situations. The season's long. Da 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 da. Ask the Toronto Blue Jays that question, because they would have loved to have won one more game and they would have got themselves into the playoffs. So every game does matter. When the things resume here after the international break, it goes to the Taça de Portugal, Sporting, Porto, Benfica. I'm assuming they're playing their B teams here, their C teams. Like, they don't really care this early in the tournament, do they?
I mean, they care. It's not as much as the league or anything. But that being said, finally, Potts looking like he's going to be playing in that game. So he's been out for about a month.
But that makes sense, though, right? Because you want to get him back up to game speed.
Yeah, for sure.
That makes sense. But you're not going to be playing any of your regulars here. Like, these are kind of like throwaway. I mean, Benfica's playing Trofense. Porto's playing Sintrens. Sporting taking on Bull Nish, but not like B-Sad. Like, this is the Bull Nish that's lower in the stages here.
It's the original Bull Nish.
The original
But
no, I mean, yeah, Taça da Lata.
Yeah, for right? sure.
Like, I mean, especially when we've talked about this, the teams with Champions League, with the Liga, with the Seleção break, this is the time to rest your players and give your especially playing Trofense and stuff. Like, I mean, even if you go in there with your B team and you end up losing to Trofense and you're out of the Taça da Liga, is it the end of the world? Does anybody really care?
Unless you're Porto never won it. And there's a lot of pressure. Seriously, there's a lot of pressure on them to win it. I know it's the Taça da Cerveja, they call it, but their fans want them to win this cup. They don't have it in their museum.
All right. So, guys, what do you want to do now? Do you want to go to Saji Stars or do you want to go to the panel picks? I'll let you choose.
Want to go to Saji Stars?
Yeah, I'll do Saji Stars. Yeah.
Good. I'm glad you actually did that, because some of the Saji Stars here have to do with a very big story out of Portuguese soccer. And so we are going to pull up the picture first. And of course, it is Portugal. World
champions.
Congratulations, Portugal's futsal team, world champions, defeating Argentina. Just once again, more proof that Portugal can get away. And we've won the beach soccer World Cup. We've won futsal. We just need to win the men's World Cup here. Like, that would be just fantastic. Of course you can.
Multiple players in that team that won the Euro, won the Champions League, and now won the World Cup. So Sporting won the Champions League. So there's a lot of Sporting players. And then this same team won the Euro Cup. And then now they won the World Cup. So that's massive. That's winning.
Mitch, talk about your Saji Star of the Week.
Yeah, my Saji Star is Jorge Brás. He's the coach of the Portugal Seleção for futsal, and special connection with Canada. He's actually born here in Edmonton.
Oh wow!
He is a cousin of very popular family here in the city, which we probably all know from Suni, putting Suni on the map for all of our friends from Suni. We've got a lot of people from Suni here in the city, so. Just awesome to see somebody from Edmonton related to so many people that we know very well. And, just awesome to see. So proud.
So hold on a second, Mitch. This is news to me. So you're saying Jorge Brás, the manager of Portugal's futsal team, was born in Edmonton?
Born in Edmonton.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yes.
Wow. So, like, has he lived in Edmonton, or was he born here and moved away?
He lived in Edmonton. I was actually talking to a good buddy of ours, Adam, because his mom is from SUNY, so she knows the family very well. You know, I'm very, very close with Brianna Gomes and Melanie. That's their first cousin.
Really? I didn't know that.
His cousins with our buddy Andy as well. So, I mean, yeah.
Very connected.
Yeah, it's very connected. It's not like it's some far off. I don't know what age he left Edmonton at. I think it might have been when he was a kid, because when I was doing some research in 97, he was already in Portugal doing his studies and stuff. So,
I didn't know that. That's amazing.
Absolutely.
You learn something new on this podcast. It's not just guys just sitting around. Like, we actually learned something new. That's fantastic. I might actually
Most of
try
the time
and,
it is, though.
I might actually try for my day job. Might try and see if I can get an interview with this guy. This is fantastic. What about you, Christian? What is your Sagi Star of the Week?
Mine's also Portugal, but it's a different Portugal. Samuel Portugal. It's a different Portugal. I think he deserves to be up there. I don't know, his performance was absolutely unreal. Awesome. I think he has the record for most saves in I don't know how long. If you guys have a chance, you can have a whole highlight reel of this guy in one game. How the saves he did, he was unreal. Mr. Portugal himself.
Well, yeah. Like I said, I don't know if there was some voodoo done on the Portimonense net or what he took that morning, but yeah, we could not score.
And I love that picture.
That's hilarious. Laugh my ass off. Oh, Kev, are you muted?
Are you muted?
Yes, I
Come
am.
Come on, Kev.
I know. I absolutely failed everyone. Okay. But I may have failed everyone, but once you take a look at how I did it in our last panel picks, you'll realize that I'm not the loser here.
Hands up, then we gonna drop.
Okay, before we go, Mitch, you said hang on. So what were we going to say?
I was just going to say, who is your Sagi Star?
It was the futsal. It was the futsal team. Okay. Yeah, that's why we kind of started with that. That's why. All right, let's take a look here. And it's been a while since we made these picks, but there's a lot more check marks on my side than it is with you guys. the big difference that we all had the Serbia game wrong against the Republic of Ireland. That ended up being a draw. And you two fools thought that the U.S. was going to beat Canada. I knew it was going to be a draw because I'm the smart one here. So take that. Then let's go to this week's games. Let's just make this a little bit bigger here. So we got some big games. Again, it's the international window. So we got a pair of Portugal games coming up. Portugal-Luxembourg, Portugal-Qatar. We have Serbia-Luxembourg. Canada with a pair of, they actually have three big World Cup qualifying games coming up here. But we're choosing to just focus on two of them against Mexico in Azteca and against Jamaica, which will be in Jamaica as well. So these are the games. And a lot of the picks were fairly similar. So let's start with the Portugal stuff. We're all confident that Portugal is going to beat Luxembourg. The Qatar games are friendly. We all knew that was going to happen. But we're all confident it's going to be a win, right?
Yes.
Yeah. If we don't beat Qatar, all due respect, but
Qatar is a friendly. We could lose against Qatar. I don't care. It's a friendly. It doesn't matter.
I care, though.
I care.
Yeah. I care.
I think for them, Sanj cares, too.
Listen, does it, though? If you're playing guys that are like, just getting you. You're trying to see how they gel with the national team and stuff like that. It's a friendly. I don't care.
No, man, you gotta win that game. It's also for morale. You're gonna go into Luxembourg.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You need to build
if you
momentum
lose against Qatar, like Christian says, morale wise, especially if guys start.
If you're not playing your starters, though,
you know what though? If we lose against Qatar, we're gonna call Sergio Conceição to go in that locker room and start slapping people, all right? He's gonna be spitting and slapping everybody, all right?
Well, then if we're gonna be doing that, then we'll bring in Sapinto to do the same, right?
Oh, there we go.
But Serbia, Luxembourg, we're all going with Serbia to win that. I really hope they lose. I think that would just really shake things up. Yeah. Canada, Mexico. This is the one that we're all a little confused on here. It is in Mexico, and for that reason, I'm going to go with Canada getting the win. Or sorry, with Mexico getting the win on that one. It's just it's tough to play in the Azteca. But you guys are thinking draw?
I hope so.
I guess I picked that one with my heart.
But yeah. I'm hoping we get
it. You know what, though? We are a different Canada. I know it's Mexico, but...
To that point, Kev, we all picked... I'm surprised. The last battle pick, you and I went USA. You went with a draw. Now we're going for a draw. You're going with Mexico. After what I saw against the U.S., I think Canada can get a draw.
Yeah. It's just, in Mexico, it's hard. You know, like, when they played the U.S., you know, yeah, it was in Nashville. But Canada has been doing well against the U.S., and quite frankly, the U.S. is nowhere near what they used to be. So they've matched up well against them. I mean, Canada beat the U.S. 2-0 in, like, 2019. So, I mean, it's a very different situation. Mexico, however... just in Mexico, I don't see it. It's going to be difficult. Canada versus Jamaica in Jamaica. We all are confident Canada can win. Again, that game scares me. I think that that's going to be a very difficult game. I think though Canada has the ability to get the job done.
To be fair, I went with the draw because I thought both of you guys were for sure going to go with Mexico. So that was that was my one differentiator, and you ended up with the draw.
Also, well, let's take a look at the standings here, just for those of you keeping track here. I'm in the lead. Mitch, you're last right now. So as it stands, you're probably wearing a Sporting jersey or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see about that.
It's a long season.
It's a long season. There's lots of predictions for you guys to shit the bet on.
So. Also, I don't know if you wanted to mention that Edmonton, that's where we are from, they're getting a few World Cup qualifier games.
That's right. Yeah, we are.
I can't wait.
So that actually is really interesting how that played out. So Alfonso Davies, obviously from the Edmonton area, he has been pushing to have games here in Edmonton for quite some time. There's also a push for Edmonton to host some games because we are one of the potential host cities for 2026. So here's how all of this kind of played out. The games were actually supposed to be played in Toronto. It was set up and booked for BMO Field. Then the Edmonton Elks, which is our Canadian Football League team, they ended up having a COVID crisis. They had a bunch of players that had tested positive, so they couldn't play a couple games, or they couldn't play one game against the Toronto Argonauts, so they had to rearrange that game. To rearrange that schedule, what they ended up doing was they talked to the Canadian Soccer Association, who agreed to move the game to Commonwealth, move the Edmonton Elks game to BMO, rearrange a game against the Saskatchewan Roughriders instead of on a Saturday. It's being played on a Friday, giving a little bit of a buffer zone for them to get the stadium ready to go for the two games. So they will be playing against Costa Rica on November 12th, and then on the 16th, which is a Tuesday, against Mexico. Now, this is the first World Cup qualifying game in Edmonton since 2008, and which was against Mexico as well. There was 14,000 fans there. This is middle of November. It'll be cold. But it will be fun. And I can tell you, when I was at BMO Field for that Canada-El Salvador game, the atmosphere was electric. It was so much fun. For anyone that is watching or listening to this from Edmonton, go and buy tickets. It is a lot of fun. And more importantly, we need to show up in droves because we need to prove to FIFA that Edmonton can be a host city for 2026, because a week after the game against Mexico, FIFA is coming here to take a look at the facility, and it's their last site check before they make their final decision. So
it's not for sure yet that we're getting those games.
No, games are for sure.
Games are for sure.
The bid for the World Cup, I'm
saying. Yeah. For 2026, Canada is going to be a host country. Now, in theory, Canada was pretty much guaranteed two host cities. There's only two host cities in the running, Toronto and Edmonton. So in theory, we should be guaranteed. However, they could turn around and say, no, you know what? The facility isn't good enough, or maybe we just can't make this work. So it'll just be in Toronto. Who knows? I'm confident Edmonton's going to get it.
Yeah.
I think it would work good. I think there will be questions, though, about grass, turf. These two games will be played on the turf at Commonwealth Stadium. And then I would imagine come 2026, what they'll do is they'll rip up the turf, put natural grass down for the year, and then boot the Elks out for a little bit during the World Cup. But I mean, that's neither here nor there. But one of the reasons why we talk about Canada, not just about because we're Canadians and because we're here in Edmonton, but Stephen Vitoria, you have Stephen Stakiu, you have some good Portuguese connections there. It was fun watching them play live. Let me tell you, it was really good. So again, anyone who has a chance, definitely go out and check it out.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's going to be my third game. One of them was River Plate. They played somebody else. Then I don't know if you remember when Portugal played Chile. You were at that game, right? The
U20s? The U20s. No, I was in Portugal. Yeah. I watched that game in Portugal.
That was the time.
Is that the game where Zequinha got the red card and he took the red card out of the ref's hand?
No, that wasn't that game, but yeah.
That was that tournament, though.
That was that tournament, yeah.
But I'm going to date myself. The very first game that I saw was back in 1994 and was Portugal versus Brazil. And it was, you know, just before they went to the won the World Cup. So Ronaldo was on the bench, but Romario was there. It was sold out. Like, it was an unbelievable stadium. I also went to the Canada Australia, which was part of the 1994 World Cup qualifying, which was an international. I've seen Mexico. I've seen Trinidad and Tobago. I've seen a lot of games at Commonwealth. It's a lot of fun, but it's only fun when there are fans in the stands. Yeah, and yeah. It's going to be different come November, November 15. Hopefully there's a lot more Canadian fans than Mexican fans. But with Alfonso Davies, I think there will be.
Absolutely. Damn, Kevin, you're old. Jesus. is your last name a nickname or is it actually your last name? Yeah. You're as old as Jesus. 1994, I was three.
Oh my God. That's ridiculous. On that note, guys, this has been fun. Another great episode of Tudo Tuga, the Everything Portuguese Soccer Podcast. Let's cheer on Portugal against Luxembourg. And if they don't win, I can promise you the next episode will be 100% dedicated to Fernando Santos. I'm just kidding, but it probably will be. All right, guys. Have a good one.
You guys, too. Take care.
Take it easy. Peace.